Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the movie Mission Impossible, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
I'm Nathan.
Welcome back, everybody. This is this is our first month of Minute Impossible. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
I'd like to introduce our guest this week. It's Nathan Renly. He is from the Goofy Movie Minute, a great podcast about the Goofy movie. He also did the Calvin and Hobbes cast. Nathan, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Great to be here taking on this mission.
I like your attitude. It's a good attitude to have for this. Well, let's get right to it then. In minute 26, this minute begins with Ethan looking through the pockets of Gallitzin's corpse and ends with Ethan on the phone, a payphone, telling Kittredge his entire team is dead.
What's a payphone?
I don't know. This movie's crazy. It's got a payphone in it. It's that part of the scene was pretty hilarious to me. When I first saw it, I was like, I completely forgot they have to use payphones for all of their spy stuff.
And he's got like the little like device that he puts that he opens up the phone and puts in there to block the call or to secure the call.
We can circle back around to him rifling through the pockets because there's not much going on there. I definitely want to talk about the tech that he has in his pocket. He pulls out of his coat. It looks like a little round piece of mesh with what looks like a bolt on it. I went back and looked at it frame by frame, and it's probably not the best practical thing, but he puts it inside the speaker of, what do you call the part of the phone that you talk into?
The microphone end, I guess. I don't know. That's a good question. Because there's the receiving end, and then there's the...
the inputting end.
It's called the inputting end. I'm sure my mother was like, make sure you're talking to the inputting end.
Yeah.
The horn.
The bottom part of the phone. All technical terms.
Topsies, bottomsies. Okay.
By the way, those don't come off in payphones. They only come off on your home phone.
And if they do come off on the payphone, it's a wonky payphone.
Yeah.
Nathan, we're going to have to take your word for that since there's no way to prove it anymore.
All right. No, I've taken off the bottom of a home phone before to build a microphone out of it, like a lo-fi microphone. But usually if they're able to be taken off on a payphone, they're already missing.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And also, I didn't quite understand what the point of it was, because what it would do is it would allow him to, I guess, mask his voice. I don't quite understand, because if someone was tapping that phone, for instance, they'd still hear what was coming in.
Yeah.
Nathan, you've gone into a phone. If you do something to the bottom C part of the phone, does it affect the top C part of the phone?
I don't have that kind of tech, so I don't know. But it also makes it free for him to call unless he's calling collect.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, you mean if he like blows, and I've always seen in movies, they take a piece of gum wrapper and they blow high-pitched sounds at the phone. It'll allow you to take free phone calls.
Maybe that's all it did. He just wanted a free phone call.
Yeah, maybe it's a piece of the gum from earlier, you know, that he just took the wrapper off of.
Well, he goes in there and he unscrews the bottom Z, puts in that metal disc, and then he just starts typing. I mean, it's a collect call, whatever it is.
But didn't they do that in War Games also? He did the same thing. He put a little piece of gum wrapper in the phone, undid it, and put that in there and made a phone call.
But that's like 1982.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that far away.
This is 1996.
Tomato, tomato.
The loophole was shut in the meantime.
Well, going back a little bit, so Ethan has, like we talked about last week, Nathan, you kind of missed it. Guess what? The entire team's dead. Ethan is the only one left alive. Ethan has just taken Sarah Davies' body and laid it down. The cops are coming. And he is searching through Gallitzin's pockets for the knock list. It's not there. And then he jumps a giant wooden fence and runs up to that payphone.
Well, we also have that cutaway to the drunk people near the river looking at him. And one of them reaching to his ear, which is a very familiar gesture, it seems, in this movie.
How is that guy stuck to the fence, though?
Oh, yeah. We talked about this last week. We had... famous director Brian De Palma on, and he told us how they did it. It was a very culturally insensitive imitation of him. I won't say it's an imitation of him. He was here. It wasn't me, for instance. I wasn't doing the voice. But
what a get.
Yeah.
They seem to stick their arms through the gate, and that's how they stayed. But I don't know why they would have stuck their arms through the gate to begin with. They were getting stabbed.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought maybe like a knife would be on the other side holding him up still, but it doesn't really seem like
pinning him.
Yeah. If you go completely limp, you're not going to stay up just because your arm's through a fence.
Yeah, we know the knife is actually in. Ethan held it because it was in Sarah Davies. So Gallitzin's being held up by, I assume, Weekend at Bernie's style voodoo. It's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I agree.
It's unfortunate to get stabbed right in the pocket like that. So.
Well, usually when you get shot in the pocket, it saves you because that whatever that, you know, deflects the bullet. But I guess it doesn't work for knives.
Yeah, good thing I had a Bible in my back jacket pocket.
Or your front pocket. You know, sometimes they carry it in their jacket front pocket.
That's true.
Once he's up to this phone, he pushes a series of buttons, and it starts to ring. It starts to ring, and then a man answers, and you guys tell me if you heard this. I heard either Black Hawk 7, Back Ops 7, or Black Ops 7. I couldn't tell what the guy says.
I thought it was Black Hawk 7.
Yeah, but that's the much cooler. That's the coolest of the three things I heard. Because I think Black Ops 7 would be a little bit too on the nose. Yeah. Impossible Mission Force. This is Jim. Oh, hi. Well, it couldn't be Jim because Jim's dead. So.
Yes.
Bad choice of names. I apologize. Uh-huh. R.I.P. Jim.
So what's interesting about this minute to me, or in general, the buildup to this minute and this minute in particular, is I'm noticing how still the camera is and how they're doing all the building of the tension with the simple cut in, cut back, cut in, wide shot, close up, medium shots, which is very, very De Palma for one, but also very old school filmmaking techniques. The camera's not spinning around the telephone booth or anything extravagant to kind of make you interested and keep your attention like you see in a lot of films nowadays.
Yeah, there's no visual shortcut.
No.
If Michael Bay did this movie, the camera would have circled the phone booth twice.
Telephone booth, right. Exactly. And even in some of the later Mission Impossible films, like the J.J. Abrams one, they're constantly moving the camera around, and you're just like, stop. Just sit there, you know?
There's a really great shot when he's in the phone booth that the wall of the phone booth with the phone on it is right in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
It's just framed perfectly. So on the other half, you can see this kind of Jurassic Party dock. And on the other side, you see Tom Cruise. But it's really well set up.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's like a split screen, split screen sort of thing, but it isn't. And the phone booth looks like it's kind of cut in half. But you can't tell. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't for the shot, you know, just to give you the perspective.
I think it is because the glass is, it's completely transparent. It doesn't look like there's any glass.
No, exactly.
There's glass just like right before it's a great
camera
shot. Right when he takes the thing off the bottom Z of the phone. But the second they pull away to that shot, you're talking about that too. It's at minute 20. It's at second 29. At second 29, you can see it literally looks like a split screen, and there's definitely no glass there because the shot is crystal clear.
Yeah, because when he's in the close-up shot, you see him breathe on it, and he breathes on it, and then after that, it's just nice and clear.
That probably means this is a set, so this probably is London.
Yeah.
I'm betting. We've been trying to go back and forth because they shot a lot of it in Prague. It was actually the first major Hollywood movie to be shot in Prague. But they also did a ton of stuff, a ton of the practical effects in London, obviously, because they didn't have any sort of facilities there at Pinewood. So we've been trying to figure out the differences, and this is definitely one of those shots. Because look at the way it's lit now. I mean, it's lit like it was done in a studio, or at least on a set, outdoor set. Because that tree looks real. I mean, I don't know, could be fake. There's a weeping willow in the background,
and a boat kind of floating around too. So.
Yeah, you can't fake that. They probably just went to a dock and, you know, because they want you to remember that you were on a river.
Oh. Yeah, the boat actually does move. You see it move in the background.
I don't think they'd go to the effort of actually putting it on a gimbal and having people moving it around.
Some intern maybe down the there boat, is pushing it.
I think the boat's staying still, and that entire set's a gimbal. What do you think?
Yeah, they spent $200 million just on this one set for the shot.
The pivotal phone booth scene from Mission Impossible.
I like when he goes into the phone booth, the score stops, and it's completely silent. It'd be really funny if the score just got muffled, like it was actually playing outside. Outside. Like Reservoir Dogs.
That would be hilarious. That would be. And amazing. So he gives a confirmation code to Black Hawk 7, and the guy asks for a designator, and he says, Bravo, Echo, Echo 1. We are a couple of clicks, and it goes straight to Kittredge, who we now know is the voice that gave Jim his assignment originally on the airplane way back in minute five. Yeah, he's now talking to him. So I assume, also having seen the movie, Kittredge is the boss of the IMF.
Yeah.
He's the person who you call when you got a problem or when something goes well. Usually I'm sure there's a chain of command and Jim's the one talking to Kittredge. Obviously, he's talking to him through the chain of command, but when all things go sideways, he just has the ability to call his superior. That's not good Black Ops training.
No.
There should be some plausible deniability in this. There should be some, firewalls.
Or at least a code name. He just says, my name's Ethan Hunt. I know it's a secure call, but wouldn't it be better to have some cool name?
Yeah, and he answers as Kittredge. He's like, Kittredge. Yeah.
Go for Kittredge.
Hey, Kittredge. Well, I forget what Kittredge's first name is. Go for Kittredge. Hey, it's Ethan. The whole plan went sideways.
Oh, bummer, man.
It's such a weird thing. Last week you missed. We've been talking about this the Fakakta plan that they created to get into the embassy and steal the knock list, and it's very convoluted. At this point, we're actually kind of happy because now the plan's very easy. The plan didn't work.
Yeah,
the plan blew up in their face. And now everybody's dead because of it. So it's actually, this is the most peaceful moment we've had in about 3 weeks.
I was thinking about that. The whole movie has been excitement up until this point. And then this is the first time where it's like, oh, like he just stopped running. Oh, by the way, he takes off his tie and opens his shirt a little bit while he's running to the phone booth. Because it's all done up when he's at the fence. And then it's casual by the time he gets there. Because that's his costume. Yeah. He's like, when they see him, they're going to be like, no, that guy was wearing a tie. It's not him.
No, it couldn't be
him. It's not him. Not the guy that's covered in blood.
Running away from the scene of the crime and covered in blood. No, that can't be him. He doesn't have a tie.
Don't even get me started on wearing gloves. They should be wearing rubber gloves. They should have been wearing rubber gloves. Obviously, later, they do wear rubber gloves. They wear very famous ones, like those cool black ones. But
or they should have at least had like some skin covered, fake skin gloves or something like that, so that it doesn't look like they're wearing gloves. It's Mission Impossible. I mean, they have to have this stuff like that.
Yeah.
If they've got those masks, they could have hand masks, with fingerprints and stuff on it.
Hand masks.
And they could look like someone else's hands.
Exactly.
Pull them off, all shocking.
Ethan, what's wrong with your hands? Oh, they're not my hands. They're the old people's hands.
They wouldn't have the fingerprints of another person. They would just be another person's physical hands. Like they'd be like big chunky hands or whatever you want.
Yeah.
Baby hands.
Yeah, because, if you put somebody else's head on you, if it's, I don't see Tom Cruise really fitting the same head as Philip Seymour Hoffman. So, but it's obviously a bigger head. So you've got to have some sort of padding or something in it. They would have the same thing with the hands, I would think.
Yeah, so Mission Impossible doesn't really work unless everyone's white, right?
Apparently. That's why Ving Rhames sits in sits around most of the time, doesn't get involved in the action.
Oh
well, yeah, we don't meet the second part of the team until we're talking 20 minutes from now when we meet the rest of the team, and there's a person of color and a man from France. So that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Getting close.
They're not Americans. Well, Ving Rhames is.
Yeah.
You can tell the IMF's well funded because you can just talk to a human right away. You don't have to ask for operator, and then it's like, enter your designated number. Bravo, Echo, 1-1. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I think you said, operator.
Bravo, Echo, 1-1. Was that 11 or 1-1? Be here forever.
I do like for him asking him to go secure.
Yeah.
It's I would. Why not just always just
always be secure. If you're calling,
always have the phone.
If you're calling main office, you know, you always should be secure no matter what.
This is Spycraft 101, guys.
Yeah.
Wear gloves. Always be secure.
Have a good plan.
Have a good plan. Stick to the plan. Don't sit on top of an elevator.
Nope, don't sit on top of an elevator.
Always be closing.
Always be closing elevator doors.
That guy didn't show up for another couple movies. Come on.
Yeah, and this this scene ends with Ethan telling him that they're dead. And then the minute ends. Ethan's definitely messed up. I mean, this is... He was super cool as a cucumber when the plan went sideways and everybody else was in trouble. But the second, now that everybody's dead, he is...
He loses it.
This is some good Tom Cruise acting at this point.
Yeah.
This is the worst day he's ever had.
It probably is.
Yeah.
He's a handsome IMF agent who obviously gets the job done. So this is probably the worst day he's ever had.
Speaking of Tom Cruise, when he hops the fence... That really takes some core strength because he kind of boosts himself over the top and then he catches himself while he's lowering down real quickly like an acrobat on the sawhorse.
Yeah, he's nimble.
He always does his own stunts, and they always say that, but I've never heard anyone be impressed by that. Like, I know it's just like a thing that he does, but I've never heard anyone say, "Isn't that cool that Tom Cruise does his own stunts?" But everyone knows it too.
Yeah,
so you just expect
it's like
it
he's just doing them. Yeah, we know he's going to do them.
Well, I think knowing what he's going to do in later movies, these stunts, not so impressive. When you tell me that you're going to strap yourself to the outside of an airplane, I'm like, okay, I'll give you kudos for impressive. That one. He's trying to impress you, Nathan. That's what he's doing. He's like, you know what? There's some people out there that don't think that my stuff is cool. They just think, oh, he just does his own stunts. Oh, yeah, well, I'll show you.
Well, I'm just saying he's strong because I don't think I could jump over a fence like that. I would go over and then I would just fall on my face on the other side.
Well, I'm sure that seems to also be, if you watch like any movie where you jump a fence, that seems to be like the stunt man way, which is you kind of let your momentum of your legs swing them over. I mean, he's not using all core strength. He's pulling himself up and then like winging his legs up and the momentum gets him most of the way over and he almost rolls over, but then he catches himself and looks super cool. So
yeah,
I couldn't do that.
Mm-mm.
Cause he was getting chased by boat cops.
Cops. I don't think the boat cops can do it either though. So
no way.
I actually don't know if he's being chased. It seems like they haven't seen him yet. Cause this fog is like pea soup. So I think he can see them because they're backlit. I know the lighting shows Gallitzin in his face, like, stark contrast, like we could see them, but I don't think they're supposed to be well lit.
Then what are they doing there? They just heard that someone got stabbed.
Remember, there was an explosion a minute ago.
Explosion!
The car exploded. That's what we think has brought the cops.
That'll do it every time. If you're trying to avoid the cops, don't explode any cars at all.
No,
not even one.
All right, so this is the point in the show where we talk about the tech of the ep. There's definitely a couple things that are in contention. Nathan, since you're our guest, you get to go first. What do you think would be the best tech of the app for this episode?
Well, I gotta, even though phone booths aren't in use today, I gotta go with the free phone call / voice changing device. Is there any other tech? Well, I'd like to hear any arguments for the other ones, if so.
I mean, someone could actually do the phone booth. It doesn't have to be awesome tech. I mean, at one point, I think someone did the floppy disk, the 3.5-inch floppy disk. That the knock list
somebody
is on.
Did the bridge the last couple weeks, you know?
Yeah, we had a fight about the bridge, but the bridge won. The bridge was a main character last week, so the bridge was actually tech of the app.
Never fight a bridge, man.
All right, so you go with voice activation. Chris, did you go with voice thing too?
Yeah, the little voice thingy. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, because he doesn't have the, like, you know, like I said, the hand gloves, so, you know, hand masks. So until they have the hand masks.
Yeah,
that would have been my
hand tech. It can't be stuff that we came up with. That you win for Chris's tech of the app. Yep. You win for best made up thing. So
thank you.
But we can't have another segment because I'm putting sound in this thing. I'm putting little drops in here for these things, and I can't come up with another one.
No, I'm gonna go with the phone. The little whatever that is he puts in the phone. That's pretty cool.
We gotta call it something with just a scrambler.
Yeah, I guess it's scrambler? Like a scrambler or. Give me a free call thing, you know, whatever that is.
It can't be for a free call. It has to be
it's like the little magic jack thing, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's the magic jack.
It's the magic jack. It's a magic jack. That's exactly what it is.
I'm going to see an infomercial for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then. So the tech of the app is definitely the magic jack / scrambler.
Yep. Oh, we could have gone with the half a phone booth for that shot, too.
Well, that shot is good. That's just good filmmaking. I don't think we can. Again, remember, we love these movies, so
yeah.
This entire movie is a
good
microcosm
tech.
Of good shots.
I like the blacks in his cinematography. Yeah. The blacks are really black. It's a great spectrum. It's not washed out, but it still looks... I think a movie like this will look pretty timeless, whereas a lot of other movies will start to look dated. Like, the ones that look really modern now are going to look dated. This one's just a nice, clean look.
I think it helps that it was shot on film. I mean, that's a big deal, I think.
And also, we got out of that last week's scenes where half of it was blue and looked terrible. I'm so glad we're back to, like, movie lighting for pretty much the rest of the movie. It's all movie lighting, which is just beautiful.
Yeah.
And also, this is probably the darkest it's going to be the rest of the movie. Other than some scenes I can think of in some air ducts, there's not going to be anything dark.
Even like those are pretty well lit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's at his darkest moment, so it needs to reflect his internal state.
Oh. Very good. That's deep. Yeah, you're right.
That's deep.
That's deep. On that note.
It's deeper. that's deeper than we ever get on this show. We talk about stupid stuff.
Once an episode, I like to say the word mise-en-scene, even though I don't know what it means.
Oh, Chris likes to say split dioptric.
Split diopter, yes. I love the split diopters.
Wow, what's that mean?
We'll get to it.
All right, cool.
It's the thing that basically looks like it's like two things are in focus, but they're not, you know? I mean, they are.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
Now that we've got our tech of the app, we're pretty much wrapped up on this one. Nathan, can you come back tomorrow for minute 27?
I sure can.
Nathan, do you have anything you want to plug today?
Sure. Just plug my podcast, A Goofy Movie Minute. That's just like it sounds. And then Calvin and Hobbes Cast. They're ones where I talk about things in small amounts also.
Well, that's the only thing I have the attention span for. If you also have a small attention span, join us over at our Facebook page on the Impossible Minute Force. You can also email us at minuteimpossible@gmail.com and talk to us on Twitter at minimpossible, M-I-N impossible. I've been Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
I'm Nathan.
This minute was self-destruct.